Welcome to Legal Talk with attorney Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Auto accidents, DUIs, slip and falls, each one can change your life. But the trial-tested, trial-ready attorneys at Flesh and Beck Law relieve your legal burden. Whether you need to heal from an injury or protect your future in a criminal matter, the legal team at Flesh and Beck Law is prepared to defend your rights. Now, here's Legal Talk with your host, Scott Whatley, and attorney Kevin Flesh.
Welcome to Legal Talk. My name is Scott Whatley. We are glad you are with us. We are with you each week with our attorney, Kevin Flesh, Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886. You can check out their website. It is fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H lawfirm.com. And once again, welcome Kevin Flesh in studio. How are you, sir?
I'm good.
You know, so many interesting areas of law. And, man, you look at all the different areas. What made you kind of zero in on the two that you primarily go after, which is personal injury and criminal law?
Yeah, so when I first started practicing, back in 1996 now, almost 25 years ago, I started at a firm that did a whole bunch of different areas of practice. It had several lawyers in it that sort of specialized in different areas. And when I started, I really started doing door law. And people say, what's door law? Well, door law is when you will take anything that comes through the door and help the people out. And what ends up happening is you start getting a general idea of different areas of practice. And back then, the things that a new lawyer could do pretty quickly is criminal defense work. The personal injury really wasn't as developed then in the sense of there was specialization like we have now, but those cases just didn't come up as frequently. But what I was able to do is just some general litigation and then also bankruptcy and some divorce work. And all of those sorts of areas of practice, you sort of learn how they integrate and things you should look out for when it comes to the areas that I practice in now. And the other thing that you have to figure out as a lawyer is just the areas of the law that you like to practice in and sort of enjoy. So when I went through the door law phase for not that long, but for a couple of years, and then we started building a firm and really started being a lot more strategic about the areas that we wanted to practice in, and did some employment law during that time period as well. But and litigation is litigation for the most part. I mean, the rules will change a little bit between, let's say, juvenile court and district court for a felony case, but it's a lot of the rules of evidence and everything else are similar. But what I found is that I just didn't enjoy the domestic relations law because it always seemed like you were only trying to get people back to sort of zero, that they were never going to be as positive as they were before they decided to divorce. And you got kids involved, and it's just a difficult time for both sides of the litigation. And then I also found the lawyers that were involved were just as difficult to deal with a lot of times. Right. And so it just became not an area of practice that I really enjoyed. And if you don't want to do this work, being a lawyer is difficult enough with sort of the animosity and the difficulty with dealing with just difficult times in people's lives, whether it's a personal injury case or a criminal defense case where someone may be going to prison for long periods of time. You've got that stressor there of trying to deal with those emotional issues. And so if you don't enjoy what you're doing with regard to the litigation part of it, you need to find something else, because the money, you can't be just driven by the money that you make. You really need to be driven by trying to help people. So, and then we did do a lot of bankruptcy work. So I got to know sort of how those rules worked and how the federal court worked relating to that. And when the rules really changed in 2003 in regards to personal liability of the lawyer filing the cases and sort of how that changed, then we got out of that area of practice. And because actually that was a pretty good area of practice with the personal injury and the criminal defense. Sure. You could do some of those together, and sometimes they tangentially work together, and so that was helpful. But don't do that work anymore, because it's just easier for other people that do it on a regular basis. It's a more of a volume business, similar to workers' compensation, I would say. We're lawyers that specialize in it. That's all they do. And so we still are a little bit more general than that. And so that's why what we do now works so well, is because criminal defense is still litigation. You're still in courtrooms, you're still dealing with those sorts of issues, same as personal injury, but the criminal defense, we're there more often, so we keep those skills fresh. Right. And it's an enjoyable aspect of figuring out if you can really push the state with regard to evidence. And there's always fun arguments to be made relating to constitutional claims and how the process is supposed to work. And you know, the presumption of innocence is always, it's a lot of times forgotten in our system these days. And so reminding people of why the Constitution is there and what the role of prosecution is a lot of times to find justice.
You've said it many times, no matter what you've done, everybody has rights.
Yeah, absolutely you do. And our system is still, it's the best system in the world. And we've got to stay the course with regard to jury trials. Are hard right now, right? With all the pandemic and everything else is going on. But that's a fundamental right that we have. And we are fighting that every day with these cases, as to the fact that the state has the entire obligation to prove that you're guilty of something and you're presumed innocent, no matter whether you are or not. The cases on the margin that are very, that are difficult cases for the prosecution to prove it, but you still know in your heart that the person is guilty. Well, you know what? The state still has to prove it. Yep. And that's why jurors, 6 or 12 people, get to decide, get in a room, listen to the evidence, make a decision as to what they think. If it's proven beyond a reasonable doubt, then it's proven. But if it's not, then you're not guilty and you're sent on your way. Mm-hmm. And as much as people look at how, you know, a lot of times in our world now, the process is more important than sort of the outcome or how it affects an individual with the way that we live. The criminal defense is still one case at a time. Mm-hmm. You still have the facts relating to those cases and how exactly someone testifies and whether they're credible. You can still be convicted with one person's word. Yeah. People forget that, and they think, well, I get calls all the time about the fact that, well, there's no evidence. They just have somebody's word. Well, that's evidence. And if that person is credible, and if that person can prove to 6 or 12 people that you did something that was criminally, you know, that you need to be responsible for, then you can be found guilty of that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little bit different in today's world. We have a lot more video. We have a lot more ability to have those things be presented on a phone, or all of the body cameras that the police are now wearing. It's a double-edged sword sometimes.
Right.
I've got a motions hearing this afternoon relating to a case that I don't know if they're going to be able to establish identification except for the video that the police now have. And so if we wouldn't have had that video like 10 years ago, it may have been a more difficult case for the prosecution. But at the same time, we're talking about justice here, and it goes both ways. If the people have that evidence, then they can prove it. If they don't, then they can't.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, today we're going to talk about an area of law that, hey, let's be honest, makes most of us kind of cringe a little bit. We don't like talking about it, but it is certainly out there. And, Kevin, I don't know if there's probably an area of law that could be more misunderstood or people know little about, is this area of domestic violence, because we all think of someone striking somebody, and that's what domestic violence is all about. But no.
It's more than that. It's more than that.
Way more than that.
And talking about sort of our involvement with different types of areas of practice, the domestic violence. So, domestic violence by itself, first of all, is not a crime. Domestic violence is what they call a sentence enhancer relating to other crimes. So, talking about hitting someone, you hit someone, and they don't ask you to hit them. I know that that's strange, but there's an actual charge of, you know, sort of agreement to fight a lot of times, and that, or fighting by agreement. That's a charge too, where the combatants agree to go outside and to figure it out. Well, that's a crime, even if you agree to do it. But where you hit someone and they don't ask you for it, that's an assault, right? You cause pain by striking someone. That's an assault. The issue that comes up with domestic violence is the relationship that you have with that person. And if the people, if the prosecution can prove that you have some sort of romantic relationship with them, then it's going to fall into that sentence enhancer relating to domestic violence. And that conviction then affects you in lots of different areas of your life because of whether, you know, you can't own a gun or possess a gun, whether or not there may be a restraining order in place that affects your ability to drink alcohol or consume other things while the case is going on, if you have to go through probation. You know, there's lots of implications relating to that. Mm-hmm. If you're licensed, if you're a nurse or you're a stockbroker or a lawyer,
right,
and you have these sorts of cases and these convictions, they may also affect your licensure. So it's all things that we have to consider. So we've got the assault. That's easy. You know, you strike someone, you're related to them, you're married, and that's an easy domestic violence. But what happens if you were married 15 years ago and got divorced 15 years ago, and now you're out in the grocery store and you see them and you're still really pissed about something that they did 15 years ago, and you strike them?
Right.
Same sort of thing, right? Because they can prove that you had a relationship sometime in your life.
Hmm.
And then there's the argument of, is it still domestic violence? And the other thing that's important with the domestic violence sentence enhancer is they've got to show that what you did affected the relationship somehow. And so that's also sometimes we'll go to trial not on the actual event and what took place, but whether or not you meant to do it in some sort of way that affects that relationship, and whether domestic violence should be the sentence enhancer or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are always interesting. So the assault's easy to sort of understand.
Right.
Harassment, right, where you say something to someone that is deemed to be threatening or harassing, or you use inappropriate language in public that could be harassing. You send them 47 texts within 5 minutes. Those are sort of harassing. And then, again, they can have a sentence or enhancer to domestic violence because of your relationship. So you haven't touched the person, you haven't done anything in the way of, let's say, threatening to kill them or anything like that, but it's deemed harassment, and that could be joint property, where you may own a home together or a piece of personal property, a car, and you're upset with them. It's the old country western song that someone is, you know, having relations with someone else, and you're upset because of the cheating, and you go and you break out their windshield and key their car. That's criminal mischief. And if you have a joint ownership, or you know that the person owns it and you say something when you key the car, that's all going to be domestic violence, and you can't do that. Again, you haven't done anything to them personally,
right,
but criminal mischief causing damage to that personal property is going to have the DV sentence enhancer with it as well.
Right. And then the way I understand it now is once the police are called, let's say, it's all in their hands then, but more likely than not, one of the two is leaving the premises.
Yes,
right?
That's correct. So in Colorado, most of the police departments have been trained that in the event that they have what they consider to be a domestic violence call, especially if you're at the marital home, for example, one of the people in that home is leaving for the night. Because what their rationale, the police rationale, is we've got to get the situation diffused and whatever happened in the home sort of calmed down. And that means they have to take a person and take them into custody.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get taken into custody for a domestic violence case in Colorado, it's a no-bond hold. So the officer, even if they think, well, it's not that big of a deal, and I could give them, you know, they could give you a bond amount or give you an agreement to a personal recognizance bond, unless the court has specifically stated to the police force, well, if you get this sort of charge, you can give them this bond. It's a no bond hold for domestic violence. So you've got to go in, stay overnight, see a judge the next morning, get the judge to agree to a bond, order that bond, and then you can bond out. So if it's over the weekend, I mean, I've had a number of cases over the years where you get taken in late Friday night. Most counties don't have any judge on staff.
Sure.
Over the weekend. They don't have court on the weekends. Denver does. There's a few, but not many. You get taken in, you're going to be there until Monday. And depending upon what your work schedule is, you're going to want to make sure that, you know, people are aware of where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And because if they don't know, then, you know, what's going on? What is the situation? And it's just not a overnight then. It could be three nights.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to see a judge, especially if it's a holiday, Thanksgiving time, you know, Christmas,
wow.
all of those sorts of things. And when these sorts of things happen, these sorts of cases occur over the holiday season, November, December, and it's unfortunate, but people then have to deal with it in the new year, and they were sitting in custody for a period of time.
Right. So, as you said earlier, everybody understands the sad part of the physical side, where, you know, but when you talk about just the emotional side or verbal side, so give us a couple instances where, you know, maybe you're fighting in the house, one wants to leave, the other one doesn't want them to leave,
yep.
whatever. So
yeah.
what are some of those scenarios
yeah.
that still qualify under
yep.
that domestic violence?
So, and what happens in those sorts of situations? Let's say you're in an argument with your significant other and there's yelling, and the neighbors next door, you live in a townhome. I've had a number of these cases where the neighbors are like, oh my gosh, I heard a big thud, I heard screaming. They call 911. They say something's going on next door. The two people that are involved in this transaction, this argument, don't call. They don't want the police there. They have not asked for them to show up. And the neighbor calls and the police show up, and they can hear you still yelling outside the door when they just before they knock. And then they knock, mm-hmm. and then they're doing their investigation. And that's where normally what happens is the police will separate the two individuals and then start talking to them. Well, the two individuals will generally readily admit to having a fight, but nothing else. But the fight by itself may be harassing.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is, and they think the police think that they have probable cause, it's loud enough that the neighbor, you know, they come because the neighbor has called and they're like, we've got to separate these people. Someone's going to be charged. And especially if you got kids involved, then they're like, we need to send one of the people that are in this argument off to jail. And then they have to decide which one. So they separate the individuals and then they figure out which one is more at fault. And they charge that person and take them to into custody, and then they're overnight or two nights, and then they've got to fight about it. And even if it's a situation where it was an isolated thing, and the people are, they generally are remorseful, it's generally not a situation where, especially during the pandemic, it's people that have been together for too long of a
right.
period of time and just get on each other's nerves.
Right.
And I've had a number of those sorts of cases this year where after the fact they're like, well, we just, you know, maybe we had an extra glass of wine that we shouldn't have, and things got out of control. And after the fact, they realized, you know, it should not have happened. Another example of where the person is trying to leave. I've had this case where the person literally gets in an argument with his wife, is in his car because he's like, we need to separate. And the wife comes out and jumps on the hood of the car as he's leaving. The neighbors see that and call the police. Now, the guy is doing exactly what he needs to do. The wife is sort of out of control. But in this particular scenario, because he kept driving out of his driveway with his wife on the
on
hood,
the hood?
In
yeah.
in the cul-de-sac for a little bit, you know, he got charged. And he got charged with a felony because now there's a car involved. And they think that, you know, there was real harm that could have caused her. But she was the one that caused it. And it's one of those situations where, again, the neighbors are doing the right thing. But he went to jail. And we eventually got that case resolved through some family counseling, and the DA recognized sort of what the wife did in the way of being out of control in the situation, and that
right.
they both needed help. But that's an unusual circumstance. It's generally in those sorts of situations, because the district attorneys recognize that these situations are so volatile that they have very little room to maneuver in the way of resolving the case,
mm-hmm.
Because the statute doesn't allow them much sort of ability to make those decisions. And politically, the DA's office doesn't want to give a good deal to that situation or dismiss the case
sure.
and then have someone killed down the road. And then it comes back to them that it was their fault because they didn't do something. And that's sort of what the prosecutors look at
mm-hmm.
is, what can we do to help rehabilitate this relationship so that this doesn't happen again? So there are hard cases to sort of get through.
Right.
And I'll get calls a lot of times where the individual will say, okay, I got charged, but my spouse really, they're not going to show up for trial, and they're not going to be helpful for the DA. And they say, so I probably don't need anybody. And I say, well, not necessarily, because in today, in the environment that we're in, the courts will a lot of times try to figure out, evidentiary-wise, any way that they can get any sort of evidence in to show some sort of criminal activity so that they can keep jurisdiction, so that they can make you do probation and have you go through classes even when you don't think you need them because it was a one-time event. They really, the courts and the prosecutors become very paternal or maternal in those situations, saying that we know better for you and what to do. And so they try to impose their will on the individuals who are involved in those transactions.
You're listening to Legal Talk. Attorney Kevin Flesh is with us. Their number, 303-806-8886. As we always mention, it's always a free consultation with Kevin, so just give him a call, 303-806-8886. So now we hear big things about restraining orders. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'll get a restraining order. First of all, how easy is that to get on someone? And then two, if you are issued a restraining order, does that automatically keep them from, you know, getting a gun or anything like that if they've just had one put on them, and then let's say later it gets, you know, revoked, but they realize it wasn't a big deal? So how easy, first of all, is it to get one?
Yep. So it's not difficult to get one. You have to, almost every day of the week, courts have the ability to show up at the main clerk's window, complete the affidavit explaining what you're concerned about with regard to why a person would need to be restrained. And you have to show credible evidence at that time through an affidavit and through your testimony about why you think it's important that you need to be protected through a temporary restraining order. Most judges are going to listen to people, and if you have any credible evidence that a person is threatening you or has threatened you or physically done harm to you or somehow is causing you to be emotionally concerned about your safety, the judges are generally going to give you a temporary restraining order. And then what happens is you then have to go out and serve the person that you're trying to be restrained from, and serve them with that temporary restraining order. There's normally a permanent restraining order hearing within 7 to 14 days after you go in for that temporary restraining order. And the idea is the first part of the transaction with the judge, with the temporary restraining order, it's ex parte. And what that means is that you don't put the other person on notice to have a full hearing at that temporary order. It's you get to tell your side of the story without anyone questioning it or being critical of what you're saying. Okay. And then a little while later, then they have the ability to then come in and make the decision of whether or not it's going to be permanent. Now, the temporary restraining order, especially if there's an allegation of domestic violence or that mm-hmm. the partner, the person that you're trying to restrain is a domestic partner, so male or female in relation to you, and there's a romantic relationship somehow there or has been, that domestic violence sort of checked the box relating to that, and the temporary restraining order could cause you to, once you're served with it, to no longer be able to possess a gun while that restraining order is in place. And certainly, while that restraining order is in place, they always ask you when you're trying to buy a gun whether or not something like that is mm-hmm. pending or you've had a history of them. So it certainly will affect you. And that's where individuals who, even though they don't really care about being restrained from the person, may fight those things because it affects them in other aspects of their life. They may not be able to hunt the way they want to. They may not be able to possess a gun because that restraining order is in place.
Right.
I just finished a case. Very interesting. It was a divorce case from 15 years ago. Yeah, 15 years ago. And the woman who divorced her husband did so through publication. He was never actually served with the documents relating to what took place. She got a restraining order as part of the domestic relations case. My client never fought it, didn't care about it. But and then she died 2 years ago. Unfortunately, I mean, she just died of natural mm-hmm. causes, not a big deal. But he went to, so he thought, oh, good, well, it's taken care of, no problems. So he went to go buy a gun recently, and he was denied because of this restraining order that happened relating to now his dead ex-spouse. CBI wouldn't allow him to have a gun while that was pending. So we had to file a motion to modify and to basically dismiss the restraining order in the domestic relations case, show that she had died and that she had no, there was no reason that there was still a restraining order in place, so that he could now go out and purchase a gun that he wanted to do and get all of those rights back that he lost because that restraining order had been in place for all that time. Wow. So those are the sorts of things that you don't even think about. Now, it was interesting because we certainly could have made the argument within a very short period of time after he got notice of this restraining order that he was never properly served. And we tried to make the argument that it should have been just dismissed outright before because he didn't get served. Because you have to be personally served with those sorts of things before they take effect on you.
Okay.
But you never know what happens.
Sure.
Some, you know, a process server may say, I showed up and I saw him in the window and he wouldn't come to the door, so I served him by refusal. And if you're not aware of that, to say, I never saw this person nearby my house, you know, it makes it very difficult to defend later. But those sorts of things happen,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, you do get due process eventually, but you've got to know about it. And that's why this whole restraining order thing is so important for people to understand that if you get served with something, look at it, make sure you know what it is, and make sure how it's going to implicate other aspects of your life before you just sort of toss it away and say, I don't care, I don't really want to see that person anymore anyway.
Right, right. And looking at a few things here in preparation for the show, I read this. It said individuals with three prior criminal convictions involving domestic violence will be labeled a habitual domestic violence offender, which is a Class 5 felony, which includes 1 to 3 years of prison and or up to $100,000 fine. So you don't want to be there.
No, you don't. And it's not the same victim in each case. It can be three different victims. So over the span of your life.
Oh, so it doesn't have to be three times with
the same person. No, it could be three different people. And so, you know, I've seen this where, you know, you've got a 60-year-old person that's maybe had some criminal history when they were in their 20s, and maybe they have a case in their late 30s or 40s, and now at 60 they have this allegation. And all of a sudden, because of their history, similar to a DUI situation where they look at a lifetime, the DA has the ability to charge a person with a felony. And at that point, even though it may have been a misdemeanor for anyone else because of your history, you could be looking at prison time.
Hmm.
And so those cases become very, very complicated because you've got these other allegations that they need to prove within the new case, and you've got a case within several cases a
right.
lot of times.
Now, much times, like a DUI, well, you've always said those stay on your record forever.
Mm-hmm.
Same here?
Same thing, yeah. And you can't get them sealed. There was a period of time where municipal domestic violence cases you were able to seal. But within the last 2 years, it's not able to do that. The legislature changed it so that if you have something, you've got to make sure that throughout your lifetime you don't get these sort of convictions. They're
sure.
important to fight every turn. Even if you're talking about a little muni case where you think, it's not a big deal. You know, it won't mm-hmm. affect me. It does affect you down the road because it'll come up with the historical perspective, you know, something that happens down the road with you right. that you have a very good defense of, but let's say you're talking about a felony where you go to trial, you're going to go to prison versus not, and because you didn't fight those other allegations earlier in your life. Every one of them is super important.
Sure. Now, if someone, let's say, was in Kansas or Nebraska
doesn't matter.
And then moved here, it would still show.
Yep, still show. It doesn't
wow.
have to be within the state. It can be within any state. It's based upon your personal life and where you've had those convictions and what those convictions were.
Wow.
Yep, and if they're domestic violence related, then you've got to mm-hmm. you've got to be careful because they will catch up with you eventually again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anytime we are talking with you, it's going to be things that affect our lives, but I'm telling you, here's a big one.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. a lot of people think about some different criminal aspects and they think, that little municipal court case that I had back in when I was 22, that shouldn't affect my life now. Well, it may if it's the sort of crime that we're mm-hmm. talking about relating to domestic violence. All of those things people think that they can handle on their own. And I'm not just saying that because I have an interest in helping
sure.
people. But the reason that it's important is because 20 years later, it may really make a difference. And even though you thought you could get taken care of and you could do it on your own then,
right.
it makes a difference now.
Sure. Once again, it is Flesh and Beck Law. Kevin, as always, thank you very much. Great information.
Thank you.
303-806-8886. 303-806-8886. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Don't go anywhere. Dan Muir and Dr. Ben Galliard coming up next.
Call now for a free consultation with Flesh and Beck Law. 303-806-8886. 303-806-8886. Or visit fleshlawfirm.com. That's FLESCH, fleshlawfirm.com. A proven team dedicated to your legal needs.
Can you believe how low rates are staying? Still in the twos. Back in the 40s and the 50s, rates were in the 5 to 6% range. How much longer are you going to wait? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Your home has never been worth more. Take AIM to get that lower rate or shorten your term. Lower your payment and pay thousands less in interest. It's your money. Call 720-895-0500 now. Affordable Interest Mortgage. Locally owned and family operated since 2001. Are you ready for the future financially? Many of our clients have the ability to access their equity for 30 years without raising their payments now. This prepares them for those speed bumps of life. Ask how you can become mortgage safe too. Take AIM, 720-895-0500, where our reputation of putting you first and listening to you is unmatched in Colorado. Call 720-895-0500 now so you can focus on what's important, family. Regulated by DOR, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
It's time for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins. Dr. Ben is committed to helping patients find the root cause of their health problems. Increase your vitality to live your fullest life without drugs and surgery. Now, here's your host, Dan Muir.
And good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins and Phoenix and soon Nashville, Tennessee. Dr. Ben, how are you today?
Oh, doing wonderful. Thank you.
Great. So tell us, Doctor, especially for the new listeners that are coming, what is functional medicine and what sets functional medicine apart from, let's say, your regular doctor?
Yeah, you know, this, and we've actually been going through this recently. We're doing this exercise called a brand script or a story branding, and just really dialing down, you know, what it is that we do and how to communicate this. And ultimately, you know, this is a true healthcare model that we're looking at, where instead of it being healthcare and just clumping those words together, and then that's what they call all the basically sick care out there, where, oh, you've got this disease, we'll give you that pill or do that surgery. This is health care. And you know, really to ultimately get somebody health and get them healthy and get them vibrant and get their vitality back. And I always say, so we can do more, be more, give more. And every single person listening on this radio knows that they've got more inside of them. And if you don't, that's sad, because, you know, even those that are really healthy, we still have more that we can do and be and give. And health is one of the biggest tools that we have to be able to enable people to be that much more and be able to be more vibrant in their life with their kids, with their grandkids, at their work, with their spouse. They can show up better. And that's what we do in this model, is we figure out what's out of balance. We help correct those. We give the body the tools. We've got this thing inside of us called innate intelligence. And that's this power inside the body to know how to heal, to know how to, you know, the bones to grow back together, or when you're a baby, for your arms to grow out to that length, that's a certain length that's going to go to. And the body can heal. This is how my mom healed from MS and how she has no longer any plaquing on her brain or spinal cord. Her body was able to heal from that. It wasn't a magic drug. It wasn't a surgery, anything. It was her body was given the right tools, was doing the right thing to be able to reverse and repair and heal these different issues that are going on.
You know, it's a lot like, I know we bring this up, but it's only because you know, we've done car shows and stuff like that, but it's a lot like your car. If you put in the wrong fuel, your car's not going to run right. If you put in the wrong oil, eventually the engine is going to seize up. And food is like gas and oil for us, isn't it, as humans, that we need to put in the right stuff so that the proper, so the insides work properly. Correct, Doc?
So a lot of people have heard the term food is medicine, or use food as your medicine. And that's fine. You know, food can be positive. There's good things. You can eat more kale. I just had some Brussels sprouts for lunch. You like Brussels sprouts, Dan?
No.
Yeah, I'm shocked.
Right?
And so, you know, there's good things out there. But more importantly than food is your medicine is food can be your poison. Food can be that toxic thing. And so, you know, I always say you can't out-kale a poor diet. So if you go down to where'd you drive through today at lunch, Dan?
You know, I've been good today. So, but I tell case in point. So I went to go get my flight physical today so that I can fly. And what did I do? I made sure I didn't drink caffeine because I wanted my blood pressure to be right. What did I do? I made sure I didn't eat sugar. I made sure I didn't. So in other words, I basically fasted all day today so I could go do the physical, pass it, and so I could go eat like a pig after this show today. So I haven't been.
You're gonna go celebrate. So
that's
so,
right.
So here's the deal: is let's say this morning you had like this little spinach omelet and a little bit of grapefruit and were really good, didn't have the coffee and all that. And then you go and you eat some, you know, all you can eat pizza ranch or whatever afterwards. And so you just by doing something good this morning doesn't counterbalance, doesn't reverse what somebody does later. So you know, we can't out anything that poor diet. You can't out exercise poor diet. None of these things are going to counterbalance it. So that's ultimately where we start, is by getting that diet into a good place and stabilized. And this is how we see miraculous stories all the time. I've got a lady from Southern Wyoming. We get probably 60% of our patients from out of state. So anybody in the Denver Metroplex all the way up into Casper, don't worry. We work with people all over. Yesterday, I talked to a lady in Cedar Rapids, South Dakota, talked to another lady in Casper, all over the place. So we had this lady in Southern Wyoming, and she came in about 2 months ago and has this rare autoimmune condition, kind of like MS, multiple sclerosis. She was in a wheelchair every day, probably 75% of the day having to be in that wheelchair. Her vision was starting to go, seeing double vision almost all the way up to her hand, just really, really degenerating, having these tremors. She's 44 years old, and these tremors where her whole body would shake, and her mom would have to squeeze her for like a minute straight.
Oh, my.
And pretty extreme.
Oh, yeah.
And I had never worked with somebody with that type of autoimmune condition anymore, but we weren't phased, and we weren't like, oh my gosh, you got to research and look up all this stuff, because it's the same basic principles, no matter if it was my mom's MS, it's a patient I just had this morning that has lupus, or anything else. We've got to start with the basics and just go step by step through the process. By 1 month in for that patient, she didn't have any more tremor. She hasn't had a tremor in over a month. By 6 weeks in, she wasn't in her wheelchair. She's now almost 3 weeks without a wheelchair and has actually put it into storage and
nice.
Is seeing out to 6 feet without having double vision, and her body is repairing and rebuilding. My mom, she was a school teacher. She's got to know why. That's her question. How'd you fix that? What'd you do? And I'm like, you know, I could go look at her chart and tell you what we've, you know, been working on, but ultimately we gave her body the tools to be healthy. And this is the beautiful part about the human body. The body just, it wants to be healthy. It just is so driven to survive. And that's just as being part of this animal kingdom that we are, you know, our bodies are ingrained to survive. We used to live on a little farm south of Loveland, and this deer got hit outside our property, and just huge rack. It was, if you've heard of the Samson law, where it, if it's bigger than that and you have it in your possession, you get fined a whole lot. That was based off that elk up in Estes Park.
Oh, yeah.
This rack was a half inch from being a Samson. So this huge, huge deer, it was out in our pasture sitting down one morning, and this guy was over off the road taking a picture, and I looked over, I'm like, oh, there's a deer sitting there. As I got a little bit closer to take a picture, it stood up, and its back legs were both broken at the knees, and it was walking on its knees, basically, with these broken legs in the back. The front ones were okay. The legs in the back were broken. It had gotten hit back there, and those legs just are whipped, and they broke at that. So these back, their calves, basically, were dangling on there, and yet it was alive from the night before, and it was still trying to walk away from potential threat. And that just, like, blew me away. Like, holy cow, we're hardwired to survive, and you know, if we could have sedated that deer, taken it in, done some reconstructive surgery, you know, whatever, that deer would have still kept living and kept going. And that's how we're designed as humans. is to be able to survive, get better, thrive if given the right things.
So, you know, with all the stuff that's going on out there with, you know, coronavirus, and I believe there's still flu and other illnesses that can get you. I think there's more than just coronavirus or the latest strand of it or whatever. But our immune system is something that we need to take care of, Doc. How do we go about doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. This is, you know, unfortunately, and I've been going on Facebook Lives almost every day since March, and that's why we've got 27,000 followers on Facebook. Check out our Facebook page, Functional Medicine Centers, Fort Collins in Phoenix, and tons of videos there. My YouTube channel, we've got over 350 videos on there, all types of different things, talking about immune system, talking about gut health, lots and lots of different things. But that immune system is the most important thing that you could be focusing on as far as preventing COVID, preventing the flu, preventing autoimmune, all of these different issues that are coming down the pike if you don't take care of yourself. And so the immune system, here's what we know. We know certain things can deplete the immune system.
Okay.
So what should we do? Opposite of those, right?
Right. Now that makes sense. Yeah. So what are some of the things that we need to look out for that would, you know, deplete the immune system?
Yeah. So tell me about what happens if you don't sleep well for a week straight. What
does
that do to
your immune system? You're wiped out.
Yep. And more likely to get a cold, more likely to feel run down, any of those things. So proper sleep is crucial. So many different things. Brain function, they're finding more Alzheimer's in people that have insomnia, all types of different things. But sleep for immune system is absolutely crucial. I've probably got 10 videos on sleep out there because it's so important. So some quick tips for sleep and for helping your sleep state. One, you want to sleep colder than what you are right now. So what do you guys set your thermostat on at night, Dave?
I think it's down around 65, something like that.
Okay. So we, in our bedroom, we've got baseboard hot water heat in there, so we can adjust room by room. We put it at 59.
59? 5.9?
5.9.
Wow. Okay. Why?
Yeah. And your body just is able to relax. It's able to sleep deeper. If it's colder outside the room, you're going to sleep in a deeper state. And so, sure, you can have your, we've got a down blanket, and my wife uses a little weighted blanket and some different things. But sleeping colder makes a dramatic difference on that deep sleep. The other thing that you can do is turn off all your electronics at least an hour before bed. So, it's a little bit gray out right now, but let's say it was a sunny day. You look outside and that is blue sky. That is telling our brain, hey, it's daytime. Get revved up. Let's do this. So the computer, the iPad, the phone, the TV, all of those things give off what's called blue light. And that's why there's actually glasses. You may have seen advertisements for those that block that blue light versus what have we, our brains evolved around over the years of before bed, you know, looking at a campfire, looking at a lantern, looking at a candle, looking at the sunset. All of these things are reddish and orange light. And so turn off all electronics at least an hour before bed to start telling that brain you've got to shut down. So that's a really important one. And even there's these chunks of salt. They're called salt lamps, and they've got this reddish orangish light, really calming to the brain. We even put in a red light bulb into one of our lamps by the bed, and so we'll turn that on and then just start that relaxation process. And so you start stretching, put on some relaxing music, some different things to be able to really get yourself into that state. It's kind of like digestion. You can't just go driving around, you know, you're driving your Uber car and drop somebody off and run over there, and then you run through and go, hey, instant food, eat it and go down and digest. No. So there's a whole process to even with digesting, you know, that cooking and smelling it and tasting it and resting and letting your body digest. Same thing with sleep. You've got to let your body get into that good sleep state. So that's sleep is a crucial part of it. Then we get into into blood sugar. And blood sugar is something that people don't think about a lot of times with that process and with the immune system, but it's a huge part of it. And most people are like, blood sugar, diabetes, that's it. Well, no, there's way more to it than that. And one of the big ones that we look at is that for between 4 and 8 hours after having a meal that spikes the blood sugar, the immune system is going to be suppressed. So think about this. If somebody gets COVID, if somebody, even I've talked to people and they're like, I got COVID, but, I'm healthy. I take my vitamin D. I do all the things you recommend, but I still got it. Well, maybe they had eaten something that was sugary. Maybe they hadn't had a good night's sleep the night before. Maybe it was just this culmination of a lot of factors and their body wasn't able to fight it off. But then by the time they did get it, they were able to deal with it, get through it, and be that much stronger afterwards, because now their immune system actually saw it and can recognize it later and be able to fight it way better than any type of vaccine or anything else out there. So if anyone has gotten COVID, your immune system is going to be better prepped than anything else out there to deal with it. So that blood sugar, huge, huge part of it. So Dan, if you run through, what are you thinking? Maybe Chick-fil-A?
Oh God, I love Chick-fil-A. Yeah, let's use Chick-fil-A as the example, especially with the waffle fries and the chicken sandwich and the, oh my gosh, the milkshake.
God's chicken?
It is. It's holy chicken.
Did you know Kanye West, he wrote a song about Chick-fil-A?
I wasn't aware of that. That's funny.
Yeah. So he's actually singing some Christian music now, but he wrote one about Sunday and like taking Sundays off, but it's about Chick-fil-A. So look that one up. But so let's say you go through there and you have this big slurpy, malt shake thing, whatever, and that blood sugar spikes up, and then you're driving the car and somebody else is in there and they sneeze on you, your immune system is going to be way less likely to be able to handle that stress of the germs coming into you and not be able to fight it off as well.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And you're listening to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins and Phoenix. And you can get a hold of Dr. Ben by calling 970-282-1173 or check him out online by going to fmcenters.com. But Dr. Ben, there are so many, and I call them undercover disguises for sugar. So if you drink a can of Coke, you're drinking a bunch of sugar. Everybody knows that, right? You drink that milkshake, you're getting a bunch of sugar. However, if you eat gluten-free Oreos, you may be thinking that you're eating something healthy.
Absolutely.
And so tell us the difference in all
video.
That. I did. Yeah. That's how I knew about them. I had no idea there was even such a thing until I watched your video today.
One of our patients brought in gluten-free Girl Scout cookies. Just be like, hey, look at these. I thought of you guys. And I'm like, those are going to sit there unopened for probably many months until I give it to somebody, maybe one of my team to take home to their husband that eats whatever. But rice flour, quinoa, sweet potatoes, bananas, all these different things can cause that blood sugar to spike up, and that creates inflammation that causes a lot of the stress on the body. So there's many different foods, many hidden foods, even like a chai tea. We always talk about this one, a grande chai tea at Starbucks is over 40 grams of sugar in it, which is even more than that 12-ounce can of Coca-Cola.
Yeah, and a lot of people will look at the person drinking the Coca-Cola going, boy, they really hate themselves drinking that, as they're sipping their chai tea, which is loaded.
Absolutely. And they're like, ooh, but why do I like it so much? Because it's got a bunch of sugar.
Exactly.
And our brains are hardwired that way. Why do bears eat nothing but berries when they can get a hold of them? And just because their brain, it's not because they're like thinking, you know what? I'm going to hibernate in the next month and a half here. I better eat 14 cups of berries a day in order to get my weight up to be able to sustain me for that entire. No, their brains go, holy cow, you got to eat and eat. And when you can get sugar, you got to go for it. And then eventually they run out and then they're fat enough and they can go. And so, you know, think about
so
that.
Doc, are you telling me that I'm fat enough to hibernate now?
Yeah, I was going to say, if you grow that beard out a little bit more, you'd be kind of looking like a bear.
Ready to hibernate.
So you know, that's what we see is that these, even when you look at cows, and why do we send cows to the feedlots?
Well, to fatten them up.
You know, to fatten them up. Because if you can get another 150 pounds on that cow, you're going to get another, you know, let's say it's, I don't know, whatever cows are running, let's say it's $4. You get another another $600 per cow through there. But
that's
none
right.
of that is actually a nutrient that humans need when we're eating that cow. It's not like, oh, good, we fattened them up, and now they're full of muscle. You know, we don't, like, send them to the Arnold Schwarzenegger feedlot.
Yeah, they're not working out.
Yeah, they're not working out doing curls over there. They're going to the, you know, the McDonald's of feedlots and just, you know, shoveling it in and eating. What are they eating? Corn, right?
Lots of corn.
Lots of corn.
Lots of corn.
And it's going... And it's going to convert over into body fat, and then they're going to weigh more. And so, you know, if you're a bear and you want to hibernate, if you're a cow, and I don't know if the cows really want to get fat and get slaughtered, but if you want to get get fat so that somebody could eat you know more of you, then eat a lot of corn, eat a lot of sugar, eat a lot of the things that your brain kind of craves, and you're gonna succeed if that's your goal, is to gain weight, to get fatter, to get more unhealthy, all of those things. But this is one of the things that I love talking about, is we've got to fall in love. We're in the February, we've got Valentine's coming up. You've got to fall in love with the process of getting healthy. And this is something that we talk with our patients all the time about, is that, you know, it's not just, okay, well, you know, I'm going to do this keto diet, I'm going to do this intermittent fasting diet, anything like that. The first part is that it says diet at the end, and that's problematic in and of itself.
That's die with
and
a T.
So,
you know that, right?
Yeah,
die with a T.
Die with a T. And we're cheating the process. And that's the biggest thing. I was talking to somebody the other day about this, and in their industry, you know, it takes time, and they've got to learn that process and become an expert and everything. Versus, hey, you know what? I'll do a couple shortcuts and build that house, but you know, it's not quite up to code. You know, you're cheating the process. Versus, you know, that one of my favorite books. Have you seen Chop Wood, Carry Water?
Okay.
So if you're looking for a good book, anybody out there, Chop Wood, Carry Water, and talks about chopping wood and carrying water, and it's that day in and day out. It's that step-by-step process, and that's really where it goes, is that we've got to continually be working on something, continually improving. And just to cheat that process by saying, hey, I'm going to lose 20 pounds this next month doing keto, is not going to get you anywhere closer to being healthy, because the next month when you stop, when you burn out from eating nothing but bacon wrapped, whatever, you want to put bacon on everything.
I do.
For keto.
Everything.
Yeah. You would be a great keto guy, Dan.
I've done it. And it works. But the problem is exactly like you say, once you stop, it doesn't take very long before the old habits to come back, and the next thing you know, everything you lost is back on. And it always seems to come back on faster than you can possibly lose it.
You want to know why it's not fair, Dan?
Why?
So here's what happens. When you start putting on body fat, there's not enough fat cells in the body to store it, you know, for another 20, 30, 40, 50 pounds. And so what happens is the body actually creates more fat cells. So that bear, it's going to be able to put fat on very quickly. So the first time, it takes a little bit of time. So you didn't just all of a sudden put on 50 pounds in 3 months.
Right.
It kind of crept up there,
and
it just went. But when you lose weight, you don't lose those fat cells. They just don't carry as much material.
Now, wait
a
minute.
So then the next time it
goes
around.
You're right. That's not fair.
It's not fair.
No. Oh, my gosh.
So this is why that happens, is that your body says, oh, I remember this. Remember, we're going to hibernate. So guess what? We only have 6 weeks of berries to eat. And, you know, you're not going into hibernation, and you've got, you know, way more than 6 weeks to eat Chick-fil-A. And so then your brain says, holy cow, we've got to eat this and let's store it. Hey, where are we going to store it? Well, look at that. We've got all these empty fat cells that are just sitting there waiting to store fat so that we can hibernate and burn that off. But we never hibernate. We never do enough work to get rid of that fat. And so then it just comes back, and then people are on this yo-yo, yeah, up and down, and they've gotten no closer to being healthy. So, and that's the big thing.
Yeah, so Doc, can we invent the fat cell sucker 3000, and we can just suck those fat cells right out?
No. Oh yeah, we've got a new Roomba. I think that might, you know, you stick that on your belly, it might start sucking that out.
No, but it's an evil cycle. It really is. I was not aware that your body creates more fat cells so it can store more fat, and so no wonder it comes back so fast. That's crazy.
Absolutely. And so this is what we're talking about today, Dan, is we've got to increase the vitality of as many people as we possibly can. That's our mission. That's our goal, is to increase people's vitality, let them experience life at a whole nother level, and you know, really create this true health model where people have that vibrancy back to them. So if this is you, if you're ready to make a change, we are ready to serve you and give as much as we possibly can. Our number is 970-282-1173. You'll talk to Alicia. She's my new patient coordinator. She works with people all over the country, gets them dialed in into whether they're a good candidate for care or not, and what that process is going to look like. From there, we'll sit down, we'll do our exam, our blood work, our brain map, get everything figured out, where exactly you are in the process and what we can do. My number one goal is, can I help you? Number two is, what's that process going to look like, and how we're going to go about getting those results. So give us a call if you've got any questions. But otherwise, I hope you enjoyed this show and learned something today.
Hey, Doc, it's been a great show. I've learned a lot today. And thank you again for doing this. Thank you again for being out there for everybody. And I just really appreciate you. And who knows, maybe one of these days you'll even get me straightened out.
Whew. Well, I always need a challenge.
That's one heck of a challenge. Doc, thank you again, man. Have a great weekend coming up, and God bless.
Okay, take care.
Okay, thank you. And you've been listening to The Functional Medicine Show, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins and Phoenix. And you can get a hold of Dr. Ben and the gang over there by calling 970-282-1173. Go to fmcenters.com. I've been your host, Dan Muir. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you for joining us for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben. Contact the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins now by visiting functionalmedicinefortcollins.com or call 970-716-0079. Join Dan Muir and Dr. Ben next time right here on KLZ.